Hello there and welcome to the Ultimate Sports Podcast. I'm Russell Hargreaves.
And I'm Jay Robson. Coming up on this week's edition, we look back at the European Football Championships in Poland and Ukraine.
And we also talk tennis, cricket, F1 and athletics. But first, Spain have of course been celebrating being crowned European champions at Euro 2012. It was after they thrashed Italy 4-0 in the final in Kiev. And I guess, Jake, first of all, a very, very emphatic final. What did you make of it? I suppose the fact it was so one-sided kind of upset the spectacle a bit.
Yeah, I do agree. I couldn't help but think, what if it was Germany-Spain? That was the feeling that I actually thought that after about 5-10 minutes, because Italy they just weren't really at the races at all.
I suppose you've got to credit the Italians, though, to have A, got there in the first place with some very, very impressive results against some very tough teams. But what do you think it was on the night that just meant that they were so outclassed, really?
I just think it was, you're right in saying they did very well in getting there, but obviously it was certain style of tactics that they applied to the whole tournament which got them there. But then by the time when they tried to use that against Spain, it was very clear that they were sort of trying to soak up the Spanish pressure and try and sort of hit them on the break, which is kind of what they've done against everyone else. Obviously it kind of worked against England as well. And I just think it was Spain were too much for them. They couldn't get the ball off them, really, to try and make that break. And obviously, once Spain scored once, I think after then it was very, very difficult for them.
And as we know, once Spain get a lead, it's so hard to try and press them. France found that at one stage, didn't they, where it's very tough to get close to the players. And they've just got such good finishers throughout that Spanish team. We talk a lot about the midfield, the Xavis, the Iniestas, the Fabregases, who came back in and had a very, very good game. And also from a Chelsea point of view as well, to have coming in and doing pretty well late on, the likes of Fernando Torres, Juan Mata getting goals as well. Jake, that's going to give them confidence, isn't it, heading into the new Premier League season, potentially, particularly Torres.
Well, of course. I mean, I'd say it was a good way to finish for him. He had a bit of a sort of mixed bag in the tournament. He did score, but he obviously wasn't even starting a lot of the time. But yeah, Chelsea going into the season, they should be confident. I mean, obviously linked with sort of everybody in the transfer market. But they'll be confident. New manager, looking for a bit of stability. They'll try and sort of stave off Pep Guardiola rumours, I think, certainly if any results go against them early on. But they've got to be in a stronger position as any of the chasing pack going into the season. Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. We'll touch on Spurs in just a moment, and of course the big news about Andre Villas-Boas this week. But just going back to Spain as a whole, you look at the legacy of this team to have won the last European Championships in 2008, then the World Cup in 2010, and to have won another European Championship in 2012. Of course, Del Bosco, the coach, immediately after the match, as well as celebrating and writing, he should, was very, very quick to point out it's time to focus and try and make this 4 consecutive major tournaments, also of course never done before, and get ready for the next World Cup in Brazil in 2014. So lofty ambitions, Jake, from this side. Yes, a few of the players are getting a little bit older now, but on the whole there's a nucleus there that if they can stay fit, stay hungry and stay in form, could do it again.
Well, absolutely. I can't think of too many actually that won't be there in Brazil. They are getting older, as you say, but I mean, they're pretty much all should be there. It's obviously a first for winning 3 international major international tournaments in a row like that. And as far as the European sort of chasing pack go, it's difficult to see who's going to better them at the World Cup. Obviously, Germany will be there or thereabouts, but based on this Euros, they're not quite at the level of Spain.
Particularly defensively. I mean, I think perhaps in that particular instance, when teams go for Germany and they're not on the front foot, they are suspect. Central defence we clearly saw with Mario Balotelli, but even at fullback as well.
No, absolutely. That's going to be their problem in a couple of years in Brazil. And then, as I said, looking at the rest of the chasing pack, obviously Holland just weren't there at all. Italy, you never really know what you're going to get with Italy these days. And then you're going to really have to sort of look at the Brazils, Argentinas to try and pick a winner. So Spain, they're going to be really big favourites probably again. Or certainly in the top two or three favourites. It's difficult to see, but then will they win four tournaments in a row? It's going to be very interesting.
And of course, with Italy, just quickly, Mario Balotelli, you know, really shot to prominence in these championships, had an up and down time in the group stage. We saw how vital and pivotal he was for much of the knockouts. The final was difficult for him as it was for the rest of the Italians. Where do you think Balotelli will react to this as, again, we move into that new Premier League season? We suspect he probably will still be at Manchester City, but we don't know.
Well, I had certainly had him down for a red card in the tournament, which he obviously didn't get. He, as you said, came of age exactly. I mean, Man City, he's got to be now, you know, he's going to be, you'd expect him to start more games than not. Obviously, they've got Aguero, they've got Tevez, but he played a big part in their season last year. He scored some vital goals for them. And, you know, he's obviously, they're not going to want to let him go or anything like that. I mean, he's got to be part of Mancini's plans. Mancini's obviously a big fan of his. It's very, very interesting to see what City do in the transfer window this summer. I think Dzeko is probably going to look to be moved on. But then, of course, they've got those three up front. I guess they can't all play in the
and
same...
And maybe Van Persie. We don't know where he's going to go. Absolutely. That's another big story this week. Robin Van Persie moving on. Will he stay and see out his contract and go in another year's time? Or will Arsenal cash in now or in January and try and at least get some money for their prize asset? We'll have to wait and see. But bad news for Arsenal. I don't know whether it's good or bad news for Spurs that they've brought in Andre Villas-Boas, the former Chelsea manager. I have to be honest with you. I personally think he could still be perceived perhaps by the dressing room and certainly externally is still slightly tainted goods. The wounds still run very fresh and very deep after what happened at Stamford Bridge. A great record in Portugal, but ultimately he comes in after Chelsea as a failure. And I'm, for one, I'm very surprised he's been given such a big London job in this league so quickly.
Well, I'm also kind of surprised that he's been given a job in England. You'd have thought it would have been, wouldn't have been surprising, say, if he'd gone back to Portugal or got a job in Europe and done well and then maybe had another crack at England. I'm very surprised, especially a team that finishes highly as Tottenham, that they've given him the chance. You just wonder what their sort of motive behind it was. I mean, we can talk all day about whether they should have got rid of Harry Redknapp or not, whether he deserved to be given a bit longer. But yeah, it's an interesting one. I guess as time goes on, we'll see. You're right about damaged goods, certainly with a lot of those players. I think the one major difference between Tottenham and Chelsea in the job that he has to do is that certainly he won't be asked in the same way he was at Chelsea to revamp the squad in the same way. Tottenham will be looking to keep hold of a lot of those players and keep that squad together. So there certainly aren't a lot of as many older players in that Tottenham squad as there were at Chelsea that the bosses wanted them to move on. So in that sense, he's not going to go in. It's not going to be a sort of repeat performance in that sense. But as you know, after a few games, if he hasn't picked up a few decent results, it's going to be a lot of pressure on him.
Absolutely. Well, that'll pretty much cover it for football for this week's edition. Next on to tennis. And of course, we're approaching the business end of Wimbledon 2012. And as that happens, also many legends of the game are busy gearing up for the Statoil Masters Tennis. That's also held in London this coming December. It'll feature the likes of Tim Henman, Pat Cash, John McEnroe. Should be a cracking few days. And McEnroe, who's a three-time Wimbledon champion, says the Royal Albert Hall is an ideal venue for this championship.
Well, I love it. I mean, it's an incredible venue, and that's why I can't help myself. You know, I've been feeling pretty good recently, and anytime I get a chance to go back there, I feel like a little bit like the Beatles when they played there, or Cream, or one of those bands, because I know this is incredible history.
The great John McEnroe there. Plenty more details I should add at statoilmasterstennis.com. As for Cash, the Aussie, who famously triumphed at SW19 back in the late 1980s, he says facing McEnroe will clearly be an extremely challenging but also a highly enjoyable opportunity.
John and I always have pretty close matches, and it's a great venue for him. He loves that sort of surface, and even though we're a little bit older and a little bit slower, we can still hit some decent shots. Hit some good volleys, ideally, and entertain the crowd a little bit, but John's always, you know, really tough on a surface like that, really tough to beat.
Now to cricket, where England remain 2-0 up in their best of 5 one-day series against Australia after match 3 was rained off at Edgbaston. More rain that we've had in this summer. I can't believe how many cricket matches in general have been called off due to rain. It's been a bit of a one-sided affair, though, so far.
Yeah, it has. And I covered this similar series 2 years ago when, again, Australia were kind of bought over it slightly randomly when it's not actually part of their normal sort of rota of coming over here. And England won that series as well, but it was a fairly tight affair. So far, as you say, Jake, England have been impressive and it's been a very good all-round team effort as well. We've seen some solid batting for me. Good to see Owen Morgan back and putting some decent scores together. Ian Bell is looking sharp. Ravi Bapara's, whose place in the squad has always been slightly under question, but with Kevin Peterson surprisingly retiring from one day internationals, another door has opened. Morgan's walked back through it. Bapara's doing his best to do the same. So batting wise it looks good, and with the bowling, the strength and depth for England really seems to be there with their one day pace attack. Now we've seen a couple of players out through injury or through personal reasons, of course, as well, particularly at Surrey after the passing, of course, of young Tom Maynard, but those that have come in or had their opportunity have done very well. Steve Finn I rate very, very highly indeed. Jimmy Anderson's looked great. They've also had the luxury of resting him a couple of times to make sure he's sharp with the South African series in mind. So, yeah, I'd say very, very good indeed.
No, absolutely. You make a couple of very, very good points there, especially the one about Jimmy Anderson. There was such a sort of furore that, oh, should we be leaving him out? Should he be, you know, given a rest? And in the modern game, I think that's how it works. And I hope, certainly by the end of the summer, that decision will pay dividends. And for the batting, yeah, you're right. No Kevin Peterson, of course. And it's nice to see. I mean, Owen Morgan was probably guaranteed a place in the one-day side anyway, but it's good to see Ravi Bapara being sort of stuck with and giving another chance, because he's a very talented player, and you do think that perhaps one day you might see him nail down a place in the Test side as well.
Yeah, quite so, Jake. Well, let's move on to Formula One now. We've got a preview of the British Grand Prix, of course, this weekend, taking place at Silverstone. It promises to be a really exciting and open race, perhaps one of the most open in years. Only Fernando Alonso has won two races this season. All of the others share between an array of drivers, one each for the McLaren boys, the Red Bull drivers. Maldonado's got in on the act, you name it. So it's been a very, very exciting season so far. Tough to predict how the races will go. And just looking at recent, you know, history of the British Grand Prix, only one British winner in recent years. That was Lewis Hamilton back in 2008. Fernando Alonso won it last year. Webber's won it. Vettel's won it. Jenson Button's never won it. It's going to be an exciting race.
It is indeed, and you make a good point about British winner. I mean, who's to say whether or not there will be another one this year? It's just so like that, the championship so far this season. I mean, you've always got to fancy Lewis Hamilton in any race he goes into. He's been very consistent this year.
Been unlucky, hasn't he, with tyre changes and pit problems?
Absolutely. I mean, certainly in those first three or four races, it could have looked a lot sort of more different at the top of the driver's standings. But he's obviously not out of it by any stretch. He got, I wouldn't say he got unlucky last week. I'd say he probably made a mistake in Valencia. But yeah, as I said, he'll be there or thereabouts. Alonso, he's as you say, two race wins. He's going to be there or thereabouts as well.
Vettel, the championship.
Exactly. Vettel as well. It's going to be tough though. Button, he's had a tough time of it in the last few weeks, I think. Difficult to see where his next win's going to come from, but it's been that kind of season. He could pop up with a win here.
I'm surprised, actually, about how he lost form after a win early season, a second place and another race where he was contending till having a minor prang. After those first three or four races, he's really fallen back. I'm always intrigued to follow the career too of Paul de Resta, the other Brit in the field who sometimes gets overlooked. The Force India is looking quicker, much sharper in recent weeks, and he's been there or thereabouts, so it'll be great to see what he can do. And we should also add, Jake, that the McLaren is due another upgrade as well.
Yeah, though, that's true as well. It's interesting what you say about Jenson Button. It spot on. He did have a good start to the season. Also, certainly in the last three or four years, especially so last season when Lewis kind of really fell off the rails a bit. Jenson, Mr. Consistent, he was there or thereabouts. You know, his smooth driving style that's always talked about. And you always think when the going gets tough, Jenson can sort of pull through it. But in the last few races, it's kind of gone a bit wrong for him. But yeah, as you say, that upgrade coming, hopefully, well, I say hopefully, but, you know, the McLarens can now kick on And sort of take it to Alonso a bit in the next few races, especially at Silverstone.
Yeah, it should be very exciting. Just finally, with the Olympics, of course, getting underway later on this month, the Spa Stars Athletics programme is proud to have 3 ex-members and 1 current member in Team GB's squad for London 2012. That's quite an achievement. Our own Lee Peters has all the details.
Well, thanks for that, Russ. And as you said, we've got 3 graduates of the Spa Sprint Stars programme in Team GB for this summer, as well as current prospect Emily Diamond. We had the pleasure of revealing the news to her first about her inclusion in the squad, and it's natural to say she was delighted.
Oh, I just can't believe it. I've been on a bit of an emotional roller coaster, thinking, oh, it might happen, and then thinking, oh, no, I don't think it will. And to hear that I've actually got on the team is just absolutely fantastic. I can't believe it.
Well, Danny Talbot was another one. He travelled with the Team GB squad to the World Championships in Osaka last year. He's also been selected in the relays and says he's not too disappointed to miss out on the 200.
It's unbelievable. I've got a huge amount of pride, and to be able to do it in London is great. There aren't words to describe it, really. As much as I'd love to go for the 200, because that would be an unbelievable experience, the only chance I've got of medaling, really, is in the relay. So in some ways, it could be better that I can focus purely on the relay.
Well, for those of you who don't know, the Spa Sprint Stars programme is a sponsorship of young athletes across the UK, helping them with funding and equipment, amongst other things, for their development. So what of the next generation? Next week sees the start of the Spa World Junior Championships in Barcelona. Desiree Henry is in this year's Spa scheme. She'll be attending with fellow Spa star Sophie Papps, but despite her younger age, she's determined to succeed.
I'll be only 16, and some of the athletes can be up to 19, but to be honest, I'm hopefully looking to come top 3 and if anything win, because I feel like I've been training hard, and I think I've got a really nice positive mindset and stuff, and training, as I said, has been going really, really well. So hopefully I'm really, really wishing for the best.
And we wish her all the luck there as well. And finally, 110-metre hurdler Andrew Pozzi, another of last year's graduates. He's going to this summer's Games, and he says the programme has helped him in ways he hadn't thought of before.
I really benefited from doing a lot of the media work and then going to championships like the European Junior Championships, where I was asked to speak at the press conference. I had a lot more understanding of my role and what I really need to do, and I felt a lot more at ease in that environment because of the work I'd done with the Spa Stars programme. So that's one major way that it benefited me. I think if the new Spa Stars this year try and really just take everything that the programme has got to offer them, yeah, I think they'll get loads from it.
So really a great week there for sponsors of grassroots athletics. It seems to be something that's been building up over the last few years. Martin Rooney, of course, now a well-established athlete, is also a former Spa graduate in Team GB. So keep an eye out on these stars of the future. You can check out their progress on spa.co.uk.
Thanks very much indeed, Lee. That's just about it for this week's edition of the Ultimate Sports Podcast. So it's goodbye from me, Russell Hargreaves.
And from me, Jake Robson, wishing you another great weekend of top-class sporting action.